Shooting USA podcast is on the air again. This one is the official first mobile recording. We are outside the gates of Fort Benning, Georgia, preparing to work some projects with the AMU, some pro tips. But the big news for this particular podcast is we are just finished with the Steel Challenge. It's first time in Frostproof, Florida at the Universal Shooting Academy. And a lot of the projections going into Frostproof held true. First of all, it's definitely not Pyru, and that means no dust. That means flat bays, and the way they oriented the bays, that means after or midday and morning sun lighting the targets against the background, and that made for some fast shooting at this year's Steel Challenge. Two world records, in fact, were broken. Shortly on the podcast, we're going to have a call-in from this year's champion, the only four-time world speed shooting champion, Casey Eusebio. So it'll be interesting to get his take on the new location and hear from him exactly how it went down. I was there. I watched it. We've got a Shooting USA feature coming, but it'll be interesting to get it straight from the guy who did it and you know, just a couple days removed from that accomplishment. It's going to be fantastic. So we'll be looking for him in about, 5 minutes or so on the call-in. But in the meantime, I'll entertain you with some interesting little factoids from around that particular event. Frostproof is fantastic. We've got it pretty well mapped out now. And when we're down there, I'd mentioned in the last podcast a couple of the restaurants that we like to go to, and of course, we hit those places up. And again, I can't say enough good things. I also mentioned in the last podcast that I was looking forward to getting down there and acquiring a Captains of Crush model number 1 grip strength trainer. And I did that, and I actually even stepped on a little further and got the 1.5, which is rated at 165 pounds of pressure to close. And it was interesting because I had trained up to that point with other grip strength trainers, and I was pretty well adept at getting a hold of the number 1 and closing it for multiple reps. But that 1.5, that's going to be the new max tool, and I made the mistake of overtraining, and I saw some diminished returns in terms of how much strength I can continue to generate with my grip. So we're on this trip to Benning for the next couple of days, and I left all of the grip strength training tools at home. That's one way to make sure I don't have the thing in my hand is just don't simply bring it with me. But happy to report that before I started diminishing the overall strength, I was able to close the 1.5 a couple of times. And Manny actually has in the Universal Shooting Academy Pro Shop a scale system that tests your physical grip strength. And I'm happy to report that I'm very even. You know, most people are stronger with their dominant hand, but I was able to generate 155 and a half pounds with my left hand and 156 and two tenths of a pound with my right hand on my strongest grips. Now, that was That was according to his scale. I went on from there to close the 1.5 model Captains of Crush, which is rated at 164 pounds, but that's negligible, and there's a lot of technique involved in closing one of those. One thing, though, that I wasn't really prepared for with that new grip strength trainer is that they have a very aggressive knurling, much more aggressive than the ones that I had been using, and especially on my left hand, that's left me with some raw finger. So this trip to Benning, leaving those tools at home, is going to be a welcome break. And I've actually identified the fact that I need to give myself breaks in the grip strength training. You're not going to do yourself any benefit by just constantly trying to close a heavy grip strength trainer. You're actually going to do more harm than good. So it's a learning process, but it's going well, and we're off and running. So we're looking at about a minute before we get Casey calling in here, so we should be hearing from him momentarily. And got a number of questions to ask him, but I'm sure knowing Casey, he'll have plenty of things to talk about on his own. And just like that, folks, here he is, Casey Eusebio, the only four-time world speed shooting champion.
How's it going, John?
Yeah, going good. How do you sound? How do I sound on your end? You sound good over here to the people.
You sound amazing.
Oh, you're sweet to say it. Well, I've been setting you up. The people, you know, I've been telling people that you came off of a commanding victory at Steel Challenge, and you are now the only four-time world speed shooting champion. You've set yourself apart from a couple of other guys, a couple of other huge names. But what I want to do is just talk about the experience. You know, it's the first time in Florida. So how did that work out?
It was actually different. You had a different scenery. You had more greens than the browns and reds you have in California. The weather was actually really nice. It wasn't too hot. The first couple of days, it was actually cold. The morning of the shoot, I could actually see my breath as I was dry firing on the side, and it was a little different than what we were used to, you know, having all that dust and the heat in California. But it was a good experience, definitely a good experience.
Yeah, that was one of the things I kind of alluded to earlier, is the fact that there was literally no dust on Frank's range there at Universal Shooting Academy. How does that affect, you know, I mean, how important is clean guns? I mean, how much does the dust affect the guns?
I think it's actually huge. Out in California, a lot of people like to bag their guns, put them back in their gun cases or the gun cover over them. Where in Florida, it's just pristine. There's no problem with it. Perfect. You had grass. You had, you know, minimal dust. It was actually really nice. So you can keep your gun in your rig throughout the whole day.
Excellent. There's another interesting thing, and another thing that's very different from Florida compared to the old home in Piru, and that is the fact that all of the bays are flat and all of the bays are oriented in the same direction. In terms of that, I felt like, you know, some people had said, and, you know, going into this ahead of time, this is going to be an advantage. This is going to make it easier to shoot. It's going to obviously make it easier for people to get to. How did it affect you? And, I mean, did you see it as an advantage?
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. And once we got there, I asked about the schedule and how, you know, we were going to be as far as where the sun was going to be in correlation to us shooting. And it was perfect. They set it up perfectly where we could be shooting when the sun was behind us instead of in front of us. And it was actually beautiful. It was an advantage for everybody. So no one was at a disadvantage. It was perfect. And they set up, you know, Frank and Manny and Shannon, they set up the whole match pretty well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was one of those things. I spoke with Phil about it after the fact. And, you know, he's done his pro-am there now 2 years in a row. And they've got a feel for the westward-facing bays and the eastward-facing bays and how, you know, morning and midday, the westward-facing bays are good in terms of light. And, you know, it's the opposite for the other side of the road, if you will, in the afternoon. And I think they took really good advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Eric Graffel made his first appearance in steel shooting at this match. That was kind of an interesting thing for me, not really knowing what to expect from him. What were your thoughts?
No one knew how he was going to do, what to expect from him. Of course he's going to perform because he's, you know, the best. And I actually practiced with him a few days prior to, probably 3 or 4 days, and we shot together. I knew he would have the Doug Koenig approach. You know, he'd go out there, shoot one for one, and actually do it a little bit faster. You know, Max and I talked, and we kind of called him the modern-day Doug Koenig. You know, he came up there, he shot one for one. I don't think he ate many pickup shots. Maybe he probably had less than 10 or 15 pickup shots throughout the whole match that he had to eat, which is extremely rare for the competition because it's all about speed. There's still the accuracy portion of it. He capitalized on his strengths, which is accuracy. He's very accurate, and it was very impressive how he you know, how he performed. But at the same time, I still put a gap on him. You know, it's not like he was really close to me. I could have not shot. I could have, you know, still ate some throwaways and still beat him. So he's still a ways off as far as still challenge is concerned. You know, I consider myself the best now at it. You know, it's unprecedented. I consider myself the best, and I respect him in every aspect of shooting. But I still know I'm dominant over him.
Well,
it's been
that way for you for years. I mean, you are absolutely the modern day king of steel shooting, and that's, like you said, an unprecedented accomplishing. Four world championships, a track record like yours is something definitely to be proud of. What's interesting for me in the case of Eric is his body of work in Ipsic-style shooting, I think, depends a lot on his ability to move. And in steel shooting, it's not about movement. There's only one of the eight stages that even requires any movement at all. And
absolutely.
An interesting fact about this particular match, that stage with that particular movement, we're looking at it and thinking, okay, Eric's going to be able to do something here, even though at that point in the match, it's pretty well decided. He still wasn't, he didn't set himself apart, and I found that to be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I practiced with him on Outer Limits, the movement stage, and he was very impressive. His exit, his entrances, the way he got into the box, the way he set up, I was, wow. You know, and I consider myself pretty great at movement as well in USPSA and Ipsic type shooting. There's, you know, guys like myself, JJ, we're probably some of the faster guys on our feet, you know, pretty athletic, being able to get from point A to point B. And, you know, watching him shoot on Outer Limits, I was like, geez. Really, really impressive. You know, I could feel it. Felt like I could feel the ground move every time he landed in that second box.
Yeah.
But that's practice. You know, practice is there for confidence. It doesn't mean you're going to dominate.
Yeah.
It's just there for confidence, and you still have to perform.
Well, that's an interesting point. What kind of things do you do leading up to that match? What type of practice do you do?
I shoot the whole match itself. I don't really go up to it and try to run 40 strings on a stage, you know. I like to shoot it all cold. I just do the normal stuff. I don't like to sit there, though, and stand in a pile of grass. I like to shoot. I like to analyze. I'm very analytical when it comes to shooting. If I make mistakes, I think about it, and I correct. I don't want to tell you too much. That way, you know, there's going to be too many champions out there. I want to be the only one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the Highlander, you got to keep some of the things to yourself. But one thing, another thing that is unique to you and your game, especially this year, well, in particular this year, is the fact that you are now the first person to put away a World Speed Shooting Championship using a polymer gun, in this case a Glock. Tell me about that and what it took to get to that point.
This was big for me. This was big for us, for Glock. We were really excited for this. It was something that has never been done before. It's been done and limited, of course, you know. But when you have the field of shooters in the open division, which is the Formula One, the top tier, the fastest shooting guns out there, and you have a Glock, you know, I call the Glock a pistol for battle, a pistol for fighting. That's what it is. It's a workhorse. It's not the, you know, light trigger 1911 with no leash set that you can customize 100%. There's some things that you can't do with a Glock. But I showed them that it's not the bow, it's the Indian. With that being said, I still have a great bow. You know, there's a lot of trade-offs. You know, I can take a slide, take it off, take another slide, put it on my frame, and shoot that. No problem. You can't do that with a 1911. Also, my gun costs a third less than a 1911 would cost. Six grand, well, mine would cost a third of that. And it's definitely functional. I proved it this last weekend. You know, I can run with the big boys. And, you know, I had a few problems out in Vegas for the USPSA National. I should have won that. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, didn't. And I'll do it next year. I'll be the first one to do it there, too. I want to set history for us and put us on the map with all the 1911s. I did it this last weekend, and it was actually an emotional one for me. I've won three of them. I've got three, you know, steel nationals under my belt as well, and you know, I've never really been emotional when it comes to victories, but this one was actually big for me. I walked away. I was walking by myself, and I could feel myself, you know, kind of tearing up. And I was like, oh, come on, man, big boys don't cry. And I stopped it, but it kind of made me laugh. I was like, wow, you know, it shows how much it meant to me, and it meant a lot to us at Glock that this victory came, especially this time of the year. It took a lot of hard work, you know. I've been training extremely hard. My hands are beat up. They've been bleeding, you know. It's a sign of hard work, and I'm really grateful, fortunate for the victory.
I think it's fantastic, and I think you were humble in victory. I mean, I was there, you know, I watched it unfold for the Shooting USA show for the cameras. We got an interview within, you know, 2 minutes of the thing being over, and I had a reasonable handle on the fact that it was your championship. But there, I mean, there was a moment as I'm watching, you know, you've already shot your runs on Outer Limits, your match is over, you've put on paper what you're going to do for the match, and now mathematically the next guy in line who even has a chance at the win, Max, is up, and in his first string he throws a bunch of misses, and I think at that point the tension now rises. I know it does for him, but his immediate following string, he completely just tanks it. He throws all kinds of extra shots in the second position. And I turned around at that point, and you were standing there with JJ, and I knew, I could tell at that point that you knew, but I think at that point also the gravity of the situation set in.
Oh, yeah, it took a lot of burden off my shoulders, but I feel for him. You know, he's my buddy, he's my friend, and I don't ever want to see, you know, my friends shoot bad, but it's, I guess it's part of the game as well. You know, I felt for him. He knew what he had to do. I knew what I had to do. But it's easier said than done. When you get in that box, timer goes off, and you're looking through your sight, you're not hitting the target, it's the worst feeling. It's absolutely the worst feeling, especially when you train so hard for something that you want. And it's almost like you need it, you know. But I felt for him. But it was definitely really relieving for after watching him shoot. I knew that it was over. That I actually heard you say it's over after a second run. You said it's over, it's done.
Yeah.
And I heard your voice, and I was like, oh, thank God.
Well,
I guess this one's finished.
It was one of those deals where I've got it in mathematically. I know what he needs to do compared to what you have just done defending the lead that you mm-hmm. had going into it. And I was leaning over to Trevor Balcom and his friend Keith. They were sitting in that golf cart, and on his first string, I said he's going to need to hit his first two shots, and he's got to be out of that box before 1.4. And it was bing bing, yeah. And he was on the move, and then the extras started coming, and they both looked at me like, mm-hmm. well, and I'm like, all right, that's his throwaway. And then his second string, same thing. You know, he's got to get out of here. By, you know, he's got to see, we got to see 1.4 here, and he's got to be moving to that other box if he's even going to be close to shaving enough time off of these runs. And as soon as it blew up,
yep.
That was it. I mean, it's, I don't want to undermine what I'm going to bring to my audience for television, but this is so fresh right now, and we're kind of going back through it. But let's, take me through the gun. You know, what is it? What did it start out as? What's been done to it? Who did the work? How did we get to the point of capturing a world championship in steel shooting with a polymer gun with a Glock?
Well, the gun itself is just a Glock 17. We have some aftermarket parts in there as far as the full fulcrum trigger. We have that inside the gun, made by Zev. I'm going to walk you through the frame first. Also, we have a silicone carbide finish on the frame, so it's really, really aggressive. I didn't know how aggressive it was going to be until I started practicing, and my hands were on fire. I'm telling you, day one, I had to have tape on my hands. I had to put new skin on my hands. It was bad. And he started laughing at me after I told him. He goes, I told you. I was like, I know. But it's really good for USPSA IFSC-type competitions where you need a solid grip. But it was really nice for this as well. You just got to be weary that your hands are going to get beat up. We have a aluminum Seymour on the gun itself. Holds a better zero than the plastic ones. I like it for the extra weight as well. I like a heavy gun. We have a three-port compensator right now that we have attached to the gun. But next year we're going to make it a two-port with two giant ports. That's it. Basically it. I mean, the gun is pretty simple. There's not much to it. I used a 115 round XTP from Hornady, which is probably the best head right now out there, really accurate. And I'm also just shooting a 9mm round. So they're probably going about 1150 feet per second. And it has a little bit of kick to it. I'm still fine tuning the rounds for next year for the whole team. And it should be a little bit softer.
Okay, I was going to say, I mean, a 115 at a little over 1,100 feet a second, that's pretty snappy, especially for a steel load, especially where we don't have any kind of a power factor.
Yeah, absolutely. It was snappy. It was what we had, you know, where we had to shoot. So I'm not going to waste ammo and be a prima donna. So we use what we have. We're going to use it all up for the rest of the year and then come up with a new load.
Excellent. Excellent. One thing I've been talking about in these podcasts and one thing I'm continuing to focus on is grip strength training. You know, for me physically and where I am in that process, I'm just starting into it. But have you done any focused training on your grip strength?
I haven't done a lot of real focused training, but I do hit it when I go to the gym. I'll put it in an arm day and just do some barbells with there inside there and do maybe 30 pounds, 35 pounds and lay my arms flat on a bench. And go up and down with it. You can also do. I also do a ball itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the grip do, and you can actually focus on single fingers and do that as well. I like to grip it. It has a. I'm not sure the material inside of it, what the material is, but I grip it really tight so that I can feel my fingers touch my palm, and the material is completely gone. I kind of do a lot of that, and I just bought some more stuff actually from Universal Shooting Academy, and they have a bunch of. I think it's a Captain Crush.
Yeah,
you have one of those?
Captain's a Crush. As a matter of fact, I do, and that's what I was telling the people on the podcast about was that I had been working up through heavy grips, grip training, to get myself prepared to get the Captain's of Crush number one, which I finally did acquire when we were in Florida last weekend, and
yeah.
I went on and bought the 1.5. And so that's my new max, and I've reached a point where I'm experiencing diminished strength, so that's an indication that I've overtrained just simply because they were new, and it was like, hey, it's new, and I've got them, I'm on the road, and I caught myself on the airplane on the way home, and I'm gripping the number one and repping it over and over again, and as I'm researching it more and I'm learning more and more not only about my physiology involved in it, but what the recommendations are, I should be treating those heavier grip strength trainers like I would treat a heavy bench day or a dip day or or a squat day. You don't train those things 4, 5, 6 times a week. You train them once or twice a week at this point. So.
Yes. Yeah, I talked to Manny about that, and he said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Probably do 3 sets of 10, and then that's it. If you overtrain, you can actually injure yourself.
Right.
You got to be careful.
Right. I saw Bob Vogel at the IDPA Nationals, and he had a Model 1 in his bag, a Model 2, and then the Model number 3, which is rated just shy of 300 pounds. And that dude can deep set that Model 3 and close it, and that's pretty freaking incredible. But here's a guy who's been working on his grip strength for years, so. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good fun, good stuff. In Titus, or not Titusville, when you're down in Frostproof area, I've been telling the people about the restaurants down there. Did you guys have any decent meals? Where did you guys eat?
we ate at Manny's restaurant. I think it's called the Shooting Star. He just opened it. They have great food down there. We also went. No, I don't want to say this because it's going to piss him off, but the Frostbite, which is the opposite side of town, they got some pretty good food there as well. I'm weird about eating when it comes to competition. Like I like to stick to foods that I know won't upset my stomach. As I get older, it's pretty bad, and I don't want to spend the night in the bathroom per se before the match. So I stick to the safe foods, and then right after I eat whatever.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, that's something that I haven't really touched on, and then I guess you're sort of taking us there. And what are the specific things that you do in preparation for these matches? Not only steel, but like for instance, USPSA Nationals. I mean, do you continue a workout schedule? How much hydration? What kind of meals are you eating? Talk about that.
I'm gonna have to charge your listeners for this.
Well, if it's a secret, it's a secret. Or you can touch on it a little bit. I don't know.
I'll touch on it. I don't I don't work out prior to the match, probably a week. I like to work out. You know, I like to work out pretty heavily. And a week before the match, I don't touch any weights. There's no reason to. When I work out to get sore. I work out to break down muscle. And if I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to touch the weights at all. I focus completely on shooting itself. You know, I'll do a little bit of dry fire. When it comes to food, I go heavy on the carbs. I stay away from dairy products. Stay away from the real fatty foods. Stick to a lot of vegetables and really try to hydrate. Drink a lot of water. You know, it's hot out there sometimes. You don't recognize how much. Still realize how much sweat you're losing, and you need to replenish your body with fluid. Make sure you drink water.
Yeah. Are you supplementing?
Here and there. I do pre-workout drinks for the gym, and then I also drink protein, but I don't really touch anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of steroids and HGH.
I was going to say, you don't want to cop to any of the performance enhancers? Just kidding.
No, man. All natural.
Well, that's pretty much everything I've got as far as steel shooting goes. Now, I know you're engaged. Where do we stand in terms of relationship status?
I've been with my girlfriend for about 6 years now. We're engaged, and we're thinking about doing 12-12.
That'd be pretty cool. That's coming right up.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not going to do anything big. You know, we're going to save the money for the honeymoon. We just bought a house. We're, you know, dumping money into that. So, like you said, you're just getting the pool of how expensive it can be, and we're trying to save some money up to it, maybe do a pool or, you know, buy more furniture. It's just expensive, man.
Oh, I know.
We're skipping the wedding for now.
Yeah, we're out there in the world with the pool project now. That's cool. I guess I've exposed a bunch of your secrets, so might as well air some of my laundry. Tit for tat, right?
Exactly.
Well, good stuff. I'm I was telling the people before you came on that this is the first mobile recording of the Shooting USA podcast. I'm actually at the Wingate outside Fort Benning and getting ready to do some work. Yeah.
That's right. My old stomping ground.
That's right. Getting ready to do some work with the boys from the Action Pistol team tomorrow and Thursday. And that's, part of your success and part of where you are now is attributed to your time with the marksmanship unit.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really honored that I came from there, and I wouldn't take it back. You know, that was an awesome part of my life, and very grateful that I was able to shoot for them.
Well, the place turns out champions, man, and obviously, there you go.
There you go.
Well, good stuff, Casey. Awesome. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. I know you've had a full day of work, and then Tuesday night match. What's the deal with the Tuesday night match? Tell me about that.
It's just a little Tuesday night weekday match they have every Tuesday, and bunch of friends out there. We have a great time. I get some good practice in. I love it. You know, I get to function with my guns and see how they're reacting in the match, because sometimes in practice you don't get that match. You don't get that match grip. You don't get, when you leave a position and pull the trigger, you don't get that. Sometimes you just shoot stationary and you forget to do certain things. So it allows me to do that. I have Area 2 coming up this weekend, and I've been shooting minor rounds, low power factor rounds this whole week for Steel Challenge. Now I got to shoot major again. I have rounds going 1,400 feet per second, that are a lot hotter than what I was shooting last week. So I have to get used to it, and I like to put myself in that condition. The more I can, the better. Even if it's a weekday match, that of course I'm gonna win, but I like to enjoy myself, and also I get to show off the product. Every new gun I get, I go there and I show it off, and everyone goes, "Oh, I love it." I probably 90% of the people that I shoot all have a Glock. Yeah, Glock 34, or they have a Glock 17 open gun. Well, I'm converting everybody, It's a revolution for me. It's my goal. I want everybody to shoot a Glock. I shoot it, but you should too.
Yeah, well, you remember my reaction when the release first came out that you were going there. I mean, I was like, I'm calling this kid up. What's he talking about? He's going to Glock? What's he doing? Well, I mean, You've certainly shown me the way, and thoroughly impressed with it. What do you have any plans to expand into any other kind of any of the other disciplines, like perhaps some multi-gun or anything like that?
Absolutely. I'm going to take some time off and just shoot a lot of production here in the off season to get myself ready. I want to shoot the production nationals, and then I want to touch on some three gun. I'm probably going to shoot open and learn my long range with the open. Mm-hmm. And then in the meantime, learn how to do the shotgun tack reload. And they've got so many new methods of loading the shotgun that you don't have to do the 4 caddy grab anymore. You can do the,
right.
the load 2.
Right.
Or there's another one that you do 4. Is that right?
There's that European style, the thing that's been adapted from the Europeans where it's 2 in a row. And, I've been trying to figure that out, and you can caddy those now. There's a couple of companies that are making caddies that'll stack them 2 in a row like that, as opposed to trying to pull them out of the clips. That's my big weak point with multi-gun is the shotgun. And I hear you say, I'm thinking about taking it on in open. I've been actually considering that myself just simply because I could get into a magazine-fed shotgun and not have to worry about trying to load rounds in the shotgun anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'd like to shoot the 3-gun nationals and maybe 3 or 4 matches throughout the year, but, I'm dedicated to the pistol.
You
bet. We don't got a rifle. We don't have a shotgun, but, this is my main job. My main goal is to push the Glock out there. I think I can do it in 3-gun as well. It looks like it's making a movement out there, since we don't have safeties. There's one safety to the gun, and once you drop the gun, it's safe.
Yeah.
You don't have to put your thumb safeties up. So that's a nice feature that we have.
That's one thing I did want to ask you about, though. When it comes to steel shooting, when it comes to steel championship, and when it comes to the steel challenge, You show up during the match and you shoot only the open division, and Max does the same thing. But there are other guys like Dave and BJ who shoot all 3 of the deals and go for that steel master. Why is it that you don't do it that way?
There's some reasons to it. I like to focus. The history of the match itself is one gun, the fastest gun. It's always been like that. And I think when you start adding the .22 and the limited to it, it takes away from your main gun. And I think it definitely does. You don't get to prepare yourself correctly. I guess it doesn't mean that much to me. Everyone knows that it's the one gun that's mm-hmm. the overall champion. And it's the same thing in USPSA Nationals. You don't go there and shoot 3 guns. You shoot one gun throughout the whole match.
Right.
Why do we treat it differently in steel challenge? Max and I were debating about it, and it's saying that, Steel Master is going to be a bigger presence. That doesn't really help the sport. Now, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost more for Joe Smith to shoot. They have to shoot a .22. They have to shoot a limited gun, and they also have to shoot open. How expensive that is in ammunition and in time?
Yeah.
That's only helping guys like me and Max that have the guns, that have the ammunition. We have everything at our disposal. It's only going to give the gap. It's going to make the gap even bigger for them. It's tough. It's going to be tougher for them because I can go on the range for 12 hours a day and shoot. Other people can't.
Yeah.
So I think they should stick to one gun. Make it the open gun. Whatever gun you want to shoot, and that's the true champion. Don't make it worse for everybody else. It's going to be tough for them.
That's a realistic way of looking at it. I think that's an interesting perspective.
Absolutely. I talked to Doug Keeling about this, about the Bianchi Cup. They're trying to make it a limited gun and open gun
right.
to be the champion. And he told me the exact same thing. It's going to be harder for Joe Smith, to beat him because he's got all the time in the world. He's got all the time in the world to train. It's his job. It's his job to win.
Right.
So why do other people think they're going to have an advantage over him? There's no advantage at all.
That's an interesting take, even to take away from Doug. That the really in the modern era of the Bianchi Cup, there's only one other guy who's ever really pressed him. I mean, there've been a handful of guys over the last 8 or 10 years that have cleaned the match, but the one guy who's actually ever really gone head to head with him, Bruce Pyatt, actually shoots 2 guns. And when I've asked Bruce why this decision to shoot the 2 guns, he feels like shooting the 2 gives him an advantage in the form of an adrenaline dump with the limited gun or with the iron gun that then prepares him later in that same day to go ahead and shoot his primary gun, his open gun. Now, that theory or that mindset didn't necessarily hold true for him this past year when he made his iron-sighted gun his primary gun and had a number of issues there and ended up not, you know, not finishing in the match where he had obviously hoped to. But it's an interesting argument. That, you know, the one thing that I think hinders multi-gun is the fact that it is so equipment-heavy and that, you know, even a guy at the club level, even a guy at my skill level, and I've done a number of projects to try to fill that void of can you build a rifle for less, you know, a rifle that's good for multi-gun, can you do it for less than $1,500? Can you build a pistol for less than $1,000 that's good? Can you get yourself into a shotgun? And even if you're doing it on a budget basis, you're still going to be in the $2,500 to $3,000 worth of guns, not counting ammo, not counting match fees. I mean, that's a heavy consideration. And
It's expensive.
I think you're onto that when you describe why your focus is what it is for Steel Challenge. You know, I mean, this is a game that can be played in your case at the highest level, at the absolute world championship level, with a gun that's, you know, less than $2,500. And
exactly.
You know, why complicate it?
Exactly. Why complicate it? And also, you know, you're touching on the equipment race. 22s, they are the most finicky guns. You know, they take one style of ammo, and it has to be that ammo. It has to be, you know, mini mag. It has to be, you know, CCI, whatever. Why are you trying to do an equipment race with that as well? It's just like, you know, if your shotgun doesn't run in three gun, you lost the match, but you could have shot great all around. Why are you going to hinder someone because their 22 didn't work? You know,
good point.
22 was first bought in the Steel Challenge for the kids,
right?
Get them to transition over to a set of fire pistol. And that's why I don't shoot 22 as well. You know, I think you should leave it to the kids. It should be shot for the juniors. You know, you let them win a trophy, let them win a plaque, let them excel. So they want to shoot that center fire. Don't take it away from them. That's why I don't really like to shoot the 22s. I don't think it's fair that a grown man is shooting a 22, and an 8-year-old should be shooting the 22 instead.
Yeah, and I think it has its place there. I think that it suits the new shooter, the junior shooter coming into the Steel game. Interesting take. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, good stuff. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, when I first started shooting, I shot a, 38 Super Caspian. It's bigger than me, and I never even got to shoot the 22. So think about the kids that are 5, 6, 7 years old, and they get to shoot a 22, and they love it. And you've got, you know, a grown man just demolishing them. It's not that fun for them.
Yeah.
let them win. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, there's been. Do you feel like at this point the history of Steel Challenge, with what you've accomplished in that specific discipline on those specific 8 courses of fire, do you feel like you've done everything that can be done there, or is there still, even in your championship runs, is there still room to go faster?
Oh gosh, that's a good question, John. I mean, the crazy part is, the guns haven't changed that much. The stages haven't really changed. You've got stages that are older than you and I out there still. And it gets faster and faster. It's really ridiculous, you know. Well, there's always space to improve. You know, I think I own several, maybe 4 stages, you know, records on them. I also own the overall time record. But I want to own all of them, you know. I want to be known as the best steel shooter of all time, and that's my mark. You know, I'm 24 years old. I've got, you know, what, maybe 20 more years left in me. Guys like Rob Latham, Todd Jarrett, they're still shooting. They're amazing. They're amazing, and they're still competing at the highest level. I hope to be, you know, that fortunate when I'm, you know, 40 or 50 years old and still be shooting at the level I'm shooting at today, you know, and I want to be a legend, just like, you know, Rob Latham or Todd Jarrett, definitely.
Well, that's the way to go out, man. I would venture based on what I've seen in the 20 years almost I've been hanging around the shooting sports that the term legend already applies, bro.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it, but I don't see myself that in that light just yet. I need to put more work in. But I have been, for a young age I am, I've been shooting for almost 18 years now, and I'm pretty old when it comes to competitive shooting.
That's pretty awesome stuff, man. At 24 years old to say I'm pretty old when it comes to competitive shooting.
Yeah, I know, right?
Good stuff, man. Well, I think we're to a point, and again, I appreciate you making time for us on your busy schedule this particular Tuesday, and I hope you'll let me call on you again to be a guest on the podcast.
Man, any time, as long as you buy me a good lunch, any time.
You bet, bro. I don't know.
Thank you so much, John.
I'm trying to think of the next time I'll see you in person. It'll probably be in Vegas for SHOT Show.
Yeah, SHOT Show. I'll be there, and make sure you bring your handsome face to my booth, and we'll catch up.
We'll swing by and say hello. Now, there you go. Casey Eusebio, just as promised. The winningest shooter in Steel Challenge history. The only four-time champion. Good guy, man. Interesting take on a number of things. And yeah, you can't say enough about his accomplishment. It's fantastic. Well, that gets us past the 40-minute mark on this edition of the Shooting USA podcast. So, once again, I'm looking for your input. Give me your feedback. What do you think of the show? Who do you want me to be talking to? What do you want me to be talking about? I'm sure at some point you're going to get sick of hearing me say, yeah, I'm still working on my grip strength. Whatever. I need your input. This is the way that I can be responsive to you in terms of what we're doing. And now that we're mobile, now that we're able to take this show on the road, look for podcasts from all over the country, from wherever we are and whenever we're there. Especially looking forward to doing podcasts at SHOT Show. That's going to be the hot ticket because that's where everybody is. So with that, I think we'll close it up. I got some Zion I to get us out the back door. When love